thank you all for having me. It's this is a kind of a totally new experience for me. My last 6 months at the department has been somewhat surreal. And now getting out of Tallahassee, which really is a delight, and getting out and meeting with people is wonderful. I'll say this is the largest group that I've had the privilege of actually speaking. I have prepared some remarks, but I find that when I do that, I don't use them, so I probably won't use them today. But what I forget now, hopefully I'll remember when we're doing the Q&A. I'd like to, you know, maybe talk a little bit about how in the world I ever got to do what I'm doing now at the department. Maybe give you a little insight of what it was like to be in Tallahassee and at DCA those last 6 months. Talk a little bit about how we approached the revisions to the Growth Management Act. Maybe putting together some basic guiding principles that at least I personally thought would be helpful in determining a legislative package. I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the package that the department advanced, and it's a little different than that 300-plus page bill you have before you. And then I'm more than pleased to maybe grade ourselves on what we did during the session that I think probably was a pretty good thing and some of the opportunities that we missed. And then I'd like to maybe talk a little bit about the department itself and where it is today, where it's going to be tomorrow, how it affects you all as professionals, as local governments, as things like that. So I guess I'll begin at the beginning. I live in a little town called Grayton Beach, Florida. It's in Walton County. It's between Panama City and Destin. If you've ever seen The Truman Show, it was filmed just a mile down the road. And that little charter school that Jim mentioned was the beneficiary of $500,000 donation by Paramount Pictures that allow us to build what today is the school. And it's a pretty awesome place. But I had a couple mutual friends who knew the governor, then the governor-elect, and they suggested that I consider being the secretary of the Department of Community Affairs. As Jim said, I have two kids, both in college, and a great wife who lives on the beach who does not want to live in Tallahassee, who thought I was absolutely out of my mind. And I told her, look, it's going to be for a short period of time. We're going to hopefully go in and have a positive influence on the Growth Management Act. We're going to kind of reform the agency, and then I'll be home. And she said, there's no way in one session that begins in 6 weeks that all this is going to happen. You're going to be there a couple of years, if not four. And I'm going to tell you up front, I love you, but I'm not going. So I'll come visit. She's been once. In 6 months, she's visited me once. So I'm home every weekend. And the biggest critic of me joining DCA was my son, the freshman at FSU, whose biggest concern was that he and I would go to the same bar for nickel beer, which I reminded him he was 18, but he reminded me it didn't make a difference. So so anyway, I did get to Tallahassee. I found a great little place, my wife did, on Craigslist, and it's a house behind a house right downtown Tallahassee, and so I've learned to eat every lean cuisine and kind of revert to a bachelor during the week, and it's worked out pretty well. But you can imagine the anxiety, if you will, of showing up, working for a new governor that a lot of people didn't know, going to an agency where folks knew there was change. Session after session after session, there was this constant theme that the Department of Community Affairs was maybe outdated, potentially needed to be changed, needed to be folded into another agency. One time it was the Department of State, the other time it was DEP, and today, yet again, there was an opportunity to do that. So what I want to do is walk around the department and start to meet people, and I did. Every time I had a 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I just run down a hall and go talk to people, and I'm here to tell you there's some great people that work at that agency. You know, they have lives, they have families, they have mortgages, they have obligations. And so this whole process of not only reforming the law, but now working and reforming the agency is one that has required a real sensitivity on my part, if you will. And I take it very serious. And the legal part of it's interesting. And, yeah, I do have legal training. The planning part is equally interesting. And I'm going to trust that as we move forward, local governments are going to take a lot of ownership in what has happened at Tallahassee. But I'm really concerned about what I can do to help reform, revise, refresh the structure of growth management in Tallahassee and leave it in a place that I'm hoping in time people will look back and say it's frankly better than it was. So perhaps it will and perhaps it won't, and I stand ready to be judged on that. Let me tell you that we did. I gathered my folks together. I said, look, it's January 2nd. They've been having committee meetings for 6 weeks, or 6 weeks, 6 months. I haven't been in Tallahassee in 2 decades. We've got to put together a very succinct legislative package. And perhaps we ought to think about where we've been and where we're going, and maybe that'll influence what we do. I believe that over the last 35 years, having the state and its role and its oversight from the top down was the right role. In a state that was incredibly fast-growing, that had its resources being depleted, that had really essentially some pretty poor planning, it made sense that in 75 and then again in 85 and all the way up to when Governor Bush was here in 2005, that we had a very strong state role. And I think that we should never diminish that. I also think, though, that that role is not fixed and it's not permanent. And it's appropriate to review where the state is, but also review where local governments are. And at least in my personal perspective, local governments have become a lot more mature. They have a lot more comfort level when it comes to 9J5 and 9J2. They understand 163 a lot better than they ever did before, and they're comfortable determining consistency. And I felt that that shouldn't be lost on anyone, and it surely wasn't lost on me. Also recognizes, try as we do, you can't always legislate good taste and legislate good planning. And so there was nothing really that we were thinking about and I was thinking about that was off the table. But I'll tell you, our program was pretty focused and pretty narrow. And what I tried to do was to go back and look at some of the pilot programs, some of those programs that the legislature had put into place that we've had an opportunity to test, to get some sense of results. We have the ability to get feedback from local governments and landowners and the environmental community, and those resonated with me. And so that was essentially the framework and the basis where we went today with the growth management package that the Department of Community Affairs advanced. And what I'm talking about is, yes, streamlining comprehensive planning. We looked at that pilot program of alternative state review, you know, that program that allowed more local ownership in comprehensive planning, a little bit more restraint on the part of the state when it comes to review, doing these ORCs and doing notices of intent. I thought that that was a pretty good approach to take that and perhaps move it to a larger scale. And this is where, you know, some of the tension between the legislature and the executive branch and other interested parties are met. And the question is, do you take a pilot program that's been in 5 jurisdictions and apply it to the 400-plus jurisdictions, or you have some transition in there? When it's all said and done, what you find in your packet and what's in the law is it went from a pilot of 5 to now applying to all local governments. And in a minute, I'll talk a little bit about some of the takeaways that I have on the session, and I have a comment on that. Another area that we really, really focused on was large-scale planning, and Jim mentioned, and his introduction mentioned part of his career experience has been doing large-scale planning. That's my experience, too. I worked for, at the time, the largest landowner in Florida. We came in and did a 75,000-acre sector plan. And when I sat down with the governor the day before inauguration and we were talking about me coming on board, he asked me what would motivate me. Why would I do this? Why would I leave paradise to come live in Tallahassee for a while? And it's only because of sector planning. It's only because of rural land stewardship. It's really predominantly about what I believe is the future of this state and putting together a framework that would allow large landowners, local governments, and the environmental community to talk about really what Florida is going to look like not 5 years from now and 10 years from now, 100 years from now, or 150 years from now. And I'm proud to say that I think we put together a very refreshed and revised sector law and rural land stewardship law. It's no longer a pilot. It is available statewide. And we went very surgically to one issue that I think is one that's definitely, definitely worthy of debate, but it goes to that four-letter word of need. And I'm a fundamental believer when it comes to large-scale planning that need is an impediment to being able to do a large-scale, long-term, long planning horizon plan. There are others that would suggest if there's no need, don't do the plan. My concern is that by the time the need catches up to the plan, the land won't be in the same ownership it is today. It'll be dissected and split up into small piecemeal pieces. And if we're really talking about fixing and saving watersheds, large habitat corridors, and things like that, I'm passionate to say I think that's the future of this state. And I would love, during my tenure at the department, to have us work 24/7 as a resource to landowners and local governments to consider doing more visioning and more long-term planning. It gives certainty to those landowners. It gives certainty to the environmental community. And it gives, I think, just a lot more certainty as far as some of our long-term economic opportunities. We were very fortunate to be able to get that put into place and put into law, and I'm pleased by that. And lastly, again, very limited on what we talked about, was going back to the EAR process, the evaluation, appraisal, and report process. We came up with what we believe to be a more streamlined, less bureaucratic, less paper-pushing type process. Legislature had even a better idea, more streamlined. It's essentially write us a letter every 7 years and you're done. But there is a more streamlined process. I think the idea is right, and so you'll see that. Again, I mentioned that we had a pretty narrow focus, and that was it. The business community and others had a much more ambitious approach. And you'll read and you'll see a lot about the death of concurrency, the repeal of 9J5, elimination of the twice-a-year cycle, and on and on and on. There's a whole litany of things that were changed. And I think a lot of that, time will tell the effect of that. When I walked the halls of Tallahassee, of the legislature, and I had the good fortune of having an office that was miles away, so most of the time I didn't wear a tie. Frankly, I didn't even wear socks. I literally have four ties, and I just rotate them. And I'd show up, put my tie on in the Capitol. Actually, I was down in the bottom of the Capitol putting on a tie in the Capitol parking lot, and this black car goes by real slowly, and the window rolls down. It's the governor. And he said, "You really change your clothes out here in the park?" I said, "Well, I do. I mean, I hate wearing a tie, so I just put it on the last minute." But you had a legislature that was frustrated with growth management. You had a business community that wanted to see change. You had the heels of hometown democracy. And it was essentially a perfect storm. And that perfect storm resulted in a very, very, very receptive legislature to amend growth management. Do I think it was time to amend it? Absolutely. I think we needed to really critically look at it and refresh it. I think the successes are there. I commented a little bit on the sector planning. I think that that was absolutely one of the biggest highlighted successes. And I think that over time we'll look back and look to see what we did for our children and our grandchildren was phenomenal. And instead of being so myopic, we really are going to have an opportunity to get back to that 30,000-foot level and come up with some really meaningful plans. And all you need to do is go to an appropriations committee during this past session when they're cutting $5, $6, and $7 billion out of a budget and removing kids from pre-K and Meals on Wheels and awful things that you would hate to see ever happen. It required us to sharpen our tools. It required us to refresh the law and, frankly, to reform the agency. And if we didn't, my fear was we wouldn't have an agency. So I'm personally pleased on where we are today. I'm pleased on the format and the form of the agency. I think that issue of need was a huge success. And I think really the alternative state review, bringing that forward, was a success. I'll tell you one of the losses there, I feel, is that I'm somewhat concerned that when you have 67 very disparate counties, you have all different kinds of sophistication when it comes to planning, that we are imposing a very new law on jurisdictions that do not necessarily share the same experiences. And we did have a provision, as we advanced the new law, that allow an opt-out provision, so it would allow local governments to return to the process they knew. If they wanted to go through a more intensive review process with the state, with having ORCs and having notices of intent, that was our proposal to do just that. But that was taken out of the legislation. Some felt that putting that into legislation, that exception, that opportunity to opt out, would end up being the exception would eat the rule, and most people would go ahead and opt out. There were some that were concerned that local governments might use that as leverage, that if we don't get exactly what we want, we'll go ahead and bring DCA in. Whatever the rationale is, that did not survive, and I'm a little sorry that we didn't have that opportunity to be able to present that and to move forward on it. Let me talk a little bit about the agency itself. And, you know, I mentioned to you the this certain amount of anxiety at the department. Going through this whole process, yeah, we worked on the whole substantive law. Well, I also inherited a budget. And you probably know this, but if you don't, DCA, the community planning part of DCA is 3% of the budget. And the other 94% is federal pass-through of all kind of federal block grants. All of those, that 94% is going to remain intact completely. It's going to shift from where it is today to a new agency called the Department of Economic Opportunity. And anybody in this room that works in that arena, it's not any different. The same gentleman that runs that shop, Ken Reese, and all of his staff will slide over to this new agency. And frankly, it makes sense. A lot of what it does has to do with economic development and economic grants. And one of the roles of this new agency is to try to focus and to consolidate all those different kind of economic opportunities. So if somebody was really seeking for some state guidance or input, they have a one-stop shop instead of having to go to a whole bunch of different folks in different places. But the community planning part, that 3% that's left, I got a budget that they cut by 90%. We were going from 62 planners to 10. And you'll read a lot. You know, I read, sometimes I'll read headlines, and I read the obituary of the growth management, the obituary of DCA, the death of it. I'm here to tell you it's alive, it's robust. Is it different? It absolutely is. Come July 1, those three words, DCA, will be gone. But growth management's not leaving anywhere. It's going to be here and viable. I did get engaged in the legislative process. I testified a lot about substance, but I looked really hard and long at the budget itself, and I asked my professional staff, let's just do what I would have done in private practice. Let's build a business plan for what would we put together for a meaningful, robust, thorough growth management team, our community planning team. And we looked at it, and we determined that 32 planners is what we need. And I said, do not inflate it, do not inflate it, do not deflate it. Let me just present the case. I made an appointment, and at 7:15 one morning, I got a call by Senator Alexander Staff, the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. He said, come see me. And I sat down, and I started to present the business case, and he looked at me, he put his glasses down, he looked at me, and he said, are you telling me you need 32 planners and X number of millions of dollars in order to fairly implement this bill? And I said, that's what I'm telling you. And he looked to his staff, and he slid it to them, and that's exactly dollar for dollar, penny for penny, what they funded to put in the legislature. He was concerned, and I was concerned, that we had a well-funded community planning arm, and I'm here to tell you we do. So I'm very pleased on where we're going and where we've been. We will have this new agency called the Department of Economic Opportunity. It has, yes, a big economic opportunity, economic development arm, a lot that exists today in the governor's office. It has all those federal grants that have to do with economic opportunity in it. It has this agency called the Agency for Workforce Innovation, which is huge. It's folded into it that does a lot of things having to do with unemployment and getting people employed. And yes, last but not least, little community planning is going to be there. And the governor called me a couple days ago and he said, look, are you serious? Are you really leaving when you're done your task? And I said, I really am. And he said, well, while you're still here, will you help me put together this new agency? And I agreed to do it, and I'm doing it now. And the only reason why I really wanted to do it was because I wanted to make sure that we got the community planning arm appropriately transitioned to this new agency, appropriately staffed, so it can move forward to work with you and local governments in what will be a monumental task, but I think a new task. And I'm excited about it. So we're working on that. So Tom Beck, who was a community planner at DCA for 20 years, who worked in the private sector for 10 years, agreed to come back and run community planning. He will slide over to that new agency with his team of 32 planners. I asked Tom when it became evident that the law was going to be the law, that we need to be prepared and start preparing white papers, and we have. And we'll have these white papers online probably in the next week that'll explain what the law was and what it is, and a bunch of Q&A on what our interpretation of that law is. So look for that. The Department of Community Affairs will not be in name there, but in spirit, absolutely. And I'm excited. I think this is a natural evolution of growth management in this state. I think that what between the alternative state review and the large-scale planning, we have an opportunity to make some very meaningful opportunities. But when it's all said and done, so much of this is going to rest with local government, how they implement it, planners, how they implement it, the Regional Planning Council, and professionals like you all. So there's a lot going on. Yes, the pendulum has swung. I think that this is an appropriate response to where we are. I'm very proud of where we are, and I will say that in a few more months, I'll return to my home back in West Florida, but I think that we have really left a law and a framework for a law and a framework for Florida that I'm convinced we'll all be proud of in the future. So I thank you for allowing me to be here. I look forward to answering your questions, and so thank you again.